AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Widespread heat's putting more pressure on power grids.
My air conditioner right now is running almost all the time.
That woman's in Scottsdale, Arizona, where highs will hit 115 degrees today. And it's even hotter in Phoenix. CBS's Jared Hill.
There have been nearly 700 heat-related emergency calls in the Phoenix area for June and July alone. This is one of them.
Cold water all over him.
Cold water on his body, plus an IV with ice-cold saline.
We put some of our IVs on ice or cool our IVs so we can cool that internal temperature quicker for those individuals.
Forecasters say the heat's spreading further south now and into the plains. More athletes are recruiting attorneys to sue Northwestern University over an alleged hazing scandal. Former quarterback Lloyd Yates.
We were thrown into a culture where physical, emotional and sexual abuse was normalized. No teammate I knew liked hazing. We were all victims.
He claims coaches and school leaders ignored it. We're learning more now about the possible federal charges former President Trump could face as the Justice Department looks into January 6. Reporter Graham Cates is in Washington.
There was a statute that would hint at the charge, conspiracy to commit an offense or to defraud the U.S., and another statute where the potential charges range from obstruction of an official proceeding to tampering with a witness.
It's still unclear whether Trump will appear before a grand jury tomorrow. The Pentagon says an American soldier is still in custody in North Korea after dashing across its border yesterday. Sarah Leslie witnessed it.
Suddenly I noticed a guy running, guy dressed in black, running what looked like full gas towards the North Korean side. And my first thought was, what an absolute idiot. I assumed he was sort of getting a mate to film it for some kind of TikTok stunt or something like that.
He was set to face assault charges in the U.S. for attacking police officers in South Korea. We're getting a better sense of why actors are fighting so hard for better pay in Hollywood. SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher talked about it on CBS Mornings.
Most of my members don't even meet the threshold to get health insurance, which is only $26,000 a year. And in most jobs, that would be considered a part-time job.
It is only July, but shipments have already started for this fall's flu vaccine. Here's reporter Alexander Tin.
Tens of millions of doses are expected to be in pharmacies and doctor's offices by September. The CDC says most Americans should get a shot between September and October.
Flu season usually peaks around January or February. The CDC says about 9 million people caught it last year. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Ew, gotta get rid of this old Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
Tell me why.
Because it stinks, boys.
Tell me why.
I've washed it so many times, but the odor won't come out.
Tell me why.
No, you tell me why I can't get rid of this odor.
Have you tried New Downy Rinse and Refresh? It doesn't just cover up odors. It helps remove them.
Wow, it worked, guys.
Yeah.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes more odor in one wash than the leading value detergent in three washes. Find it wherever you buy laundry products.
If this were a Reese's TV ad, you'd be staring at a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. And sure, my voice is peanut buttery smooth, but still, you need to see the peanut butter cups, right? No? I can really just say Reese's and you'll go get some? Okay. Reese's. 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 Really working, actually. Reese's. Reese's. This, I'm on to something. Reese's. Reese's. Reese's.
Listen to this mission. Highlight ag research from the university, showcase education, and show off new technology. Written almost 70 years ago, it's still what you'll find at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. This year's show includes hot tech like drones, food grown across the state, and how it all impacts our economy. Sauk County is your Farm Technology Days host at the Badger Steam and Gas Engine Club in Baraboo, July 18th through 20th. Details at wifarmtechdays.org. I'm Terry Barr.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Thursday, July 20th. In Wood County, the Golden Sands Resource Conservation and Development Council Incorporated Finance Personnel Committee will meet at 9 a.m. at the River Block Building in room 206. The Forestry Agriculture Wildlife Committee and the Water Resource Committee meetings will follow at 10:15. The regular business executive committee will meet at 11. A special meeting of the Wisconsin Rapids Common Council will be held at 6 p.m. at the City Hall Council Chambers. They will hear a presentation by the Community Development Department regarding the Paper Mill Recovery and Redevelopment Plan, and they will consider the Planning Commission's recommendation regarding adoption of the plan. In Portage County, the Justice Coalition Executive Committee meeting has been moved to 1516 Church Street. It will still be held at 8 a.m. Stevens Point will hold a special Police and Fire Commission meeting at 11 a.m., and the Redevelopment Authority will meet at 3:30. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight, otherwise mainly cloudy skies expected. Lows level off around 60, southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Slight chance for scattered storms tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 76, cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Lows level off around 54, tomorrow night clear skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 81.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 29th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in Mike Hittner and Luke Conkle. They are joining us from the Historic Point Boss to talk about their whodunit. Looking forward to that. Right now in studio, we have our good friend, Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Shane Blazer. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, James.
Good to see you.
You also.
And we have, of course, our good friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. We say hi to you guys. Good morning. Thanks for being here, because it is morning when we film this. I will get used to saying the afternoon at some point. Good to have you here. Thanks a lot for being here, Shane. Let's go ahead and get right into some things as you're getting set up here. And I don't know if that one's going to stretch for you, sir. I don't know. You might have to go headphoneless.
That works.
Yeah? Yeah? Okay. If you can't hear me, I am not doing my job.
I'm sitting right across from you. I can hear you.
Shane, I want to go to a couple places today, and I'd like to know anything that's on your mind. Okay. But I want to start with, of course, the dog park. The dog park is up and running. We're very excited about this. For some of our locals out there, can we tell them the location and some of the details of the dog park?
So the dog park is not currently open
not
yet.
Not currently open yet. I'm sorry. But, sorry.
Yep. So it
going to be open is how I meant to put that.
Yep. You're correct. So it's about Saratoga and 25th Street is where the parking lot's going to be, and hopefully that will be getting asphalted in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So right now, I just talked to our prior to speaking with you, I was speaking to our park and rec director, and they're out there working on tree trimming and kind of cleaning up some things out there. But once we had gotten all the brush and trees out of the way, got the fencing up, and we had the gift of a very bumper crop of buckthorn, which is an invasive species.
Yeah.
So it's a mess. It's fast growing. So they got on it right away, sprayed it, cut it, and they'll be spraying it again. Hopefully then I'll be spot treating that in the future. But yeah, it was quite the surprise when all of a sudden it just started growing with a fury.
Worked a lot of construction in my life, and I'm reading the story, and the first thing that pops up is these how many times we were on doing a home improvement job or something, and we think we know everything, and then you pull up the tiling,
yeah,
and what's waiting for you is some disaster that you never even planned for or something like
that.
I was
so surprised when he drove me out there, and we have this kind of nice airy grass area that's growing, and mm-hmm. they've been watering it, and it doesn't help that it's so dry out, but and then there was just all around this grass area was just a sea of buckthorn, and they're taking care of it, and it's not a huge problem, but it's just another hurdle.
We've seen recent stories in the last couple of years of cities like ours using goats to help get rid of some of this and everything. I should journalistically mention, big fan of goats. I like goats. I think they're fun. I think they're cool. So I have to journalistically put that out there right away. I'm a fan of goats, and goats getting jobs. Goats don't have a lot of work. So did you guys really flirt around with this idea?
Yeah, we actually, in a couple of circles, I've been speaking with people, and they've suggested goats, and maybe if we did some screaming goats and fainting goats. The screaming goats caused the fainting goats to pass out.
And, yes, yes.
But then we're like, well, they also eat all the grass, and we're trying to grow grass. But Yeah, so we kind of talked about that since Wausau does it too, and
it was something that was thrown around.
Oh yeah, we talked about it. That's for sure.
What is going to be done with it though? What is the best course of action with something like
so
that?
So we sprayed it with a product, and then as it was starting to wilt and die, we went through and we mowed it down, and then we're going to spray again. Mm-hmm. Probably tomorrow,
yeah.
And then that will hopefully take care of a bulk of it. And then I think because of the seed bed, you know, apparently I learned with the goats when they eat buckthorn, they neutralize the seeds. So then once it comes out the other end, it doesn't grow. And so that's part of the problem with buckthorn is the seed bed, and that, you know, it could take several years for all the seeds to germinate. And, but yeah, so the goats kind of help neutralize the seeds, but. Yeah. So hopefully we will next year, you know, we might have to close the park for a week to be able to spray some spot spray. But I think if we stay on top of it and not let it get away, then we'll hopefully be able to control the future growth.
I'm sure we're not unable to have an exact date or anything, but are we still looking to have the park open relatively soon?
Yeah,
or?
Probably early fall, late mm-hmm. summer.
That's great. I think for a lot of people, especially when I talk to people, and I think you and I even feel a little similar to this, being able to get some use out of it this year would be great.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
I don't think anybody's demanding that or have these expectations or anything like that, but it'd be really fun to be able to use it a little bit more or use it a little this year before winter hits and everything.
Yep, and the plan is hopefully, you know, depends on what kind of winter we get. It'll be open during the winter, so people will be able to still utilize it during the winter. You know, we've got some park benches we need to put out in there, and you know, there's some landscaping that needs to be done around the parking lot. We have to figure out the exact what we're going to do because we ran water mm-hmm. in between the small and the large dog mm-hmm. park, so there'll be water on site. We need to kind of figure out how to manage that and some of those things like that. But and I think there's a friends group that are kind of talking about maybe meeting and getting together mm-hmm. to kind of figure out, you know, kind of adopt the park of like citizens. So yeah, it's all kind of coming together. But yeah, this fall we'll have a ribbon cutting event, and
we're looking forward to it.
Also at Park and Rec, we're talking about naming. So we're going to start a process on. And we'll have to watch our Facebook page and our website about submitting suggestions for names, and then we'll ultimately probably pare that down, and then kind of have the community vote on the name. So come up with some creative dog names, which I'm sure they'll be creative names. But
we got a very creative community. We're naming our WIRI chicken. Yeah, they got some names. They're going to have some names for you. That's a good one.
So that's coming.
Looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And we were looking forward to something that happened in the last 48 hours and everything. We've got this new weather cam that I wanted to tell people about that is pretty cool. I love weather. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting and stuff. So I'm fascinated by this thing.
Yeah, so I know last year a community member, I'll shout out her name, Chris Bartek, she was kind of making contact with Channel 9 and kind of working through. And because, yeah, I thought the same thing, you know, where's Wisconsin Rapids weather cam? Because they're around here. And so it kind of hit a wall for a little bit. And then one of our street supervisors, Cody Knudsen, he kind of picked it up because, you know, I know a lot of people in some of our supervisors specifically, they like to look at the weather cam during the winter, be able to hopefully kind of see what's going on our streets. And so he kind of picked up the torch and got it across the finish line. And last week they showed up and went up. I've been a part of the city since 1997. It's the first time I went up on the roof. And kind of checked that out. And so I think they're kind of working out, finalizing connections, mm-hmm. External connections, because they can see it internally. And they're working on it, be able to see it externally. And, yeah, that should be up and running. They'll be on their website. And then hopefully we'll get a lot of exposure on Channel 9.
I watch Channel 9 and I'm a supporter of them. Mm-hmm. During the pandemic, I worked really closely with a couple of reporters mm-hmm. over there sharing information, and it was really vital to our coverage and their coverage. Yep. Worked really well together, but I've also always been very honest with them that I think it's quite silly that they don't do a lot more reporting here in Rapids. Mm-hmm. How many stations up there in the Wausau Marshfield area, and nothing, no reporting here in Nakusa, Port Edwards, all these cities that have so much going on. Mm-hmm. And they get that too. I think that they see that too, especially some of the people that are over there. And whether I've talked to them about possibly working there or just other things, they want to cover this area, I know. So this kind of stuff, I think, is going to be leading more and more to that.
Yeah, that's what I hope, because, you know, everybody likes to, you know, we have, obviously we have a great community, and, you know, if we can get exposure, you know, in the northern Wisconsin here, central to northern Wisconsin for activities here, I think it's good for the community, and yeah, I'd like to see a lot more too.
We're speaking with Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Shane Blazer, along with our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Recently, you and our good friend Sheriff Becker got to tour the jail. How'd that go?
Yeah, I had a meeting set up with him. He's like, hey, let's add a tour of the jail onto this. And I was like, absolutely. And wow, what a facility.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all concrete block right now. But we were standing up in what is a control tower. And it's just, it's amazing in the number of cells and, you know, how many people are going to be able to be housed there. And yeah, I can't wait to get another tour and kind of see a progress. But it's phenomenal. And you know, it should hopefully meet our needs for many decades. And, you know, nobody wants to see us have to expand jail space and have to house more people, because that's not the direction, you know, the goal would be to go smaller. But I think we will be set for many years to come.
Well, for what it's worth, my family and I have decided to, be off. We're not on the other side of the tracks anymore. We're on the good side now. So that wing that you were going to have for the mail-offs, you don't even need that anymore. So you can save some money there. What about, first up, is everything on time? Is the construction pretty much everything going on time?
Yeah, it sounds like everything's kind of progressing and planning. Everything's going well, and you know, the county and the city have worked very well together with, you know, the units of government and the staff, between our staff and the county staff, and very good communication. Meetings are set up regularly should we need to have meetings, and it's been good, because you hear about other communities where the cities and the county doesn't work so well, and apparently not too far from us this is going on a jail project, and where here it's worked very well, and it makes things easier and less complicated for everybody.
Absolutely.
And, you know, or at least for the majority, everybody's on the same page, and, you know, they want to get this project through and hopefully smooth and without issues.
I'm happy to hear that, because I've been paying attention to some of our other cities that are dealing with similar situations, including, like, right above us almost, and I know that you know better than I do. We got some pushback on this when it was first being proposed. That's why it took so long to get to this point. Mm-hmm. But even some people that I talked to that I know were on the other side of this at one point, once the shovels went in the ground, everybody was on the same page. Yep. I don't want to speak for this city. I don't want to speak for every member of this city. But I talk to a lot of people, and our listeners love to give me feedback and love to tell me when they don't like something or whatever. But to give them credit as well, they love to compliment things also. And I've gotten nothing but positive feedback about this jail. Along with that, the workers that have been working in that area, I've gotten nothing but good stuff from this. I think you're absolutely 100% right about this. The city, everybody is pretty much on the same page now. There's no stopping the progress. There's no stopping it. So it kind of feels like people, if anything, they came around to that.
Yeah, there's definitely a need. You know, it's like, I'm sure the sheriff has spoken many times, the $1 million a year that we're spending moving people out of county. And, you know, now this facility will be big enough to keep everybody here. And then potentially there might be some rooms to rent and some beds to rent, and which will help offset operation costs. And then we'll still have room for our own growth should we need it in the future. And it'll allow for programming and, you know, all the other things that the sheriff is passionate about in our jail system, and the education that is going on, and, you know, hopefully trying to keep that revolving door from revolving.
Yes. Not only keeping the clients, the people safer, but the expansion of knowledge and being able to have more that, and that just makes everybody better at what they do. And it makes our community safer, better. This is a smart investment. And we're seeing the progress of that. The construction already bringing some of that, I think, to it, where we're seeing people really understand that and get that.
Yeah, and we got Tim Giebert into the fourth courtroom, which will, you know, sometimes court takes a long time, and for punishment to be effective, it's got to be swift. And so, if you can get that turnaround time going a little quicker, and you know, getting sentences out and having room to carry out those sentences. Hopefully, maybe there's a deterrent in there.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a proposal to ending to city committee meetings going around, and I wanted to touch on this with you. For one, again, talking to listeners and such, I didn't talk to a lot of people in the community that were familiar with this. And so if we can talk about what the proposal is and what it means, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah. So how our system works is in the beginning of the month, we have our committee meetings where the council has four committees that kind of handle business. They have the agendas. They spend time talking, going through those items. And then they make a recommendation, or then it's pushed forward to council a few weeks later, and the council takes that action on it. And some of the thought has been, because some communities do this, is that you have maybe a committee or a council meeting on the first Tuesday of the month, and then another council meeting on the third Tuesday of the month, and then you handle the agenda items there. So they're introduced there, they're talked about there, and then they're voted on there. And so some of the proponent to it is, or some of the positives to it, is that things can maybe happen quicker. Mm-hmm. But some of the, you know, the cons to it is that things can happen too quickly, that sometimes when things are talked about in a committee, you get that week or two to ask more questions, kind of think about it, and people change their minds. But ultimately, it did go to a committee of the whole, and they voted. It ended up being a tie 4-4, so I don't get to vote in the committee of the whole meeting. I can only vote at a council meeting to break a tie. So that tie resulted in the item not passing. So it ultimately is a dead issue until it might be brought up again. But what I propose, and then Jay Catnow put in a referral for it, is that some of our ordinances need a two reading. So you come to one council meeting, and you read an ordinance, and if it doesn't pass unanimously, it has to go to another council meeting, which is a bottleneck, in my opinion, because now you're waiting another whole month for something to pass. And so what will come eventually to city council here, hopefully in the next few months, is that it'll go to one meeting and be done, because under Robert's Rules of Orders, there's ways to bring it back. You know, motions to reconsider, motion to, you know, to change that yet. So it's not like once the council passes it, it can never be talked about again. But I just think that I've seen on council a few times where items have been held up because somebody wasn't in favor of it. Maybe one person, they're holding up a project for another month. And I just think it's, you know, it can be dealt with within that month. Our traffic ordinances only need one reading, and it seems to be okay there. So I think the other ordinances can go through that same process, but we'll ultimately see what the council kind of decides.
I noticed this throughout the country, not just here in Wisconsin, but a lot of things that people have issues with at the state level, and they're taking it at kind of a community level when it's not necessarily the same thing. I understand that we're very frustrated in Washington and in Madison with things not getting done faster and that sort of thing. But on a local level, you need patience. You need more time with certain subjects. I can't think of many things that you can just just a day and we're done, you know, and move on. It's important for the community to hear this information, for them to be able to get feedback, as well as what you mentioned there. You know, you have a week to sit on something. I can see both sides of this. Do you fall on a certain side of it? Or?
Well, I didn't get a chance to vote, but I kind of went through and I watched. And I'll put my opinion out there. I watched some of WAPACA's meetings, and that's how they do that. And I was going to plan on watching more, but ultimately I probably would have voted to try it. I know some people were apprehensive, especially internal staff, because it's a change, you know. Yeah. But I'm okay with change a little bit, you know. I guess I didn't want to close the door on an idea that potentially I think could have been good. And if not, then we change it back, you know, because we used to back not that long ago. We used to have two council meetings a month. And then, you know, unfortunately, one council meeting was really kind of nothing. But that's when we still had the committee process. So it just didn't work well. And so that's why ultimately Tom Rayom, you know, back when the city clerk, he was kind of a proponent of that, is going to you know, having our committee meetings kind of held at that one council meeting time and then have a regular council meeting. And I think that's worked out well, but, you know, it can always be improved upon.
Well, it sounds like one of those things where, especially with a tie in the voting, that maybe a tinkering here or there, and it might pass. It might be one of those things that could actually, and I don't, there's nobody who's going to argue with faster, you know, government or faster work being done, especially when so many of these things are time sensitive.
Absolutely. Yeah. You hate to see a project kind of hit a wall, kind of wait for a meeting to happen. I can always call a special council meeting. And then trying to organize people to come on a special night. And I'm always willing to do that. I would never put a wrench in that. But I just think it could be potentially a different option.
Mm-hmm. Cranberry Blossom Fest, the 4th of July spectacular celebration we have, and, of course, the State Water Ski Show Tournament. Our area has some amazing events in the summer that we get to look forward to and that we get to celebrate. And one of them coming up, and it's really kind of, to me, one of the wrap-ups of summer, is the State Water Ski Show Tournament, and that is right around the corner, coming up the July 20th through the 23rd at beautiful Red Sands Beach in Lake Wazeecha. Largest, longest-running water ski show tournament. Mm-hmm. Our locals know this already. I'm not telling them anything they don't already know. But to other listeners out there, in case you didn't know, and we want you to welcome you to town here and everything for this event. It's a 4-day tournament featuring 24 of Wisconsin's best water ski show teams, 72 individual competitions, all vying for a state title and a chance to qualify for the National Water Ski Show Championship. Shane, you've been in this area a long time as well. This event is a big one. Is there anything in the event that you really look forward to that you're real excited about?
I always like seeing the activity in the community. Yeah, you know, that draws in a lot of people. There is some really amazing water skiing that goes on, things that are way beyond my capabilities. It's impressive. You know, they put a lot of time in it, and, you know, they do some pretty amazing things there. And, you know, on top of that, we have a large baseball tournament in town. It's a state junior, the Ramblers for Legion, and that starts this weekend, or I think Friday morning it starts. And that could be a 4-day event here. And we're bringing in, I think, six teams outside of our local team.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah. Our local team gets an automatic bid, but they and then another team in our region here gets to and then six teams from outside the area. So there's going to be a lot of activity with baseball people around here and then all the water ski.
Hope they all have fun. Have a great weekend with
the weather.
Yes. Hopefully the weather is good. And same thing with the tournament here. Mm-hmm. There are some things for people to keep in mind with the tournament. We have some areas blocked off. Some of the lake is unable to be used. Can we go over some of that?
Yeah, I'm not as tuned in with that because it's in Grand Rapids, but I did see on Facebook that there is some closures on part of the lake just to accommodate water skiing. So you don't have any people kind of popping through there when they shouldn't be, and kind of messing up that whole event there. But
it's a fun event, a fun weekend, and we're looking forward to welcoming a lot of people from out of town. And I'm glad this is how good we are together, Shane. I wanted to wrap up with the baseball tournament, and you already touched on it. How we last weekend had the guys in from the complex and talking about that and really the history of it, the proposal, the building, everything. One of the things that came out of that conversation to me was certainly all the things that we're looking forward to hosting and having and that we can as we go forward here and the state starts to learn more and more about this gem that we have here. But I love the idea of the things that we don't even see coming yet.
Right.
That like 2-3 years from now, we're hosting or we're doing said event and we're like, wow, didn't even think about this. When it comes to potential in this area, is that one of the major selling points that you have when it comes to businesses or just residents in general?
Yeah, you know, I think one of our huge assets is our central location. And, you know, not everybody plays sports, but a lot of people spend a lot of time and a lot of money on traveling sports. And so, you know, if we can have facilities here, like, you know, last year we had the 8-man state football tournament here at our turf football field. And now, like this weekend with our baseball at the quad, and then I think next year we might be in running, hopefully, for a state bid for the Rangers. Mm. And so I think the more exposure we can bring people here, and like in the springtime when we have Platteville and other, I think Platteville and Point were playing at the Quadplex, so, you know, college baseball teams. So the more exposure we can get here, I think, and hopefully through WIA, that they see this and recognize that, you know, here's an opportunity to be to a central location with amazing amazing complex, amazing fields, the people, scout, and everybody in the school district that that put in time there and trying to get that place to, you know, keep it up to standards. And I think that's really good for the city.
We've got the old Shopko Mall businesses moving in there. We see other kind of a business, sort of empty building all of a sudden sign and things moving in. It's an exciting time in this area.
Yeah, it's keeping us hopping, and you know, we're trying to help these organizations and businesses. You know, I'm a fan of like pulling away hurdles as we can to help them out, but obviously there's always a few hurdles. But yeah, there's activity going on, and there's hopefully going to be some more activity coming up here, like you said, and you know, Harbor Freight being open, and you know, seeing you know, as I went to the grocery store last night, and you know, seeing the lights on in that parking lot again, and seeing some activity and some cars is a good thing, and as the other three stores, you know, get going and get their build outs done and open up, there's going to be a lot more activity there, and it's just, you know, it's like the days of old of Shopko, the cars and people running around there, and you know, that's good. And then there's two outlots that are going to see some development, and so there'll be a lot of activity in that area. And then hopefully Staples Building will something will come of that, because that was sold not too long ago to a developer, and so hopefully there'll be some activity there coming up. As they've done their parking lot of Staples, and they've kind of done some work around there already, marketing it.
Nice work over there.
Yeah.
And plenty of exciting things going on around here, plenty of exciting things to talk about next month, I'm sure. Looking forward to talking again real soon. Shane, if people have follow-up questions, want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Well, you can call my office. You can call my direct line, 715-421-8202. I try to answer it. If I'm unable to, my assistant will gladly answer and help out also. And you know, through our Facebook page and our website, we have ways you can contact us also.
Yeah, wirapids.org is a fantastic website. Be sure to check that out. And as always, appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, James.
Also, a big thank you to our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Be sure to go to YouTube, type into your search bar, Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, like and subscribe to that page, and keep up with the great work that they are doing. We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734. Locally grown, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This week's flavor forecast is brought to you by Swiftwater Ice Cream, 300 Market Street in Nakusa. This week's flavor of the week is Hawaiian Coconut. Find Swiftwater Ice Cream on Facebook.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. Earlier this year, two northwestern Wisconsin police officers were killed in the line of duty. Now their communities are honoring them. County Highway SS in Barron County between Chautauqua and Cameron was renamed Monday night to be the Officer Emily Bradenbeck and Officer Hunter Scheel Memorial Highway. The officers were killed on April 8th after being shot by 50-year-old Glenn Perry during a traffic stop, who then died from a gunshot wound after shooting both officers with an AR-15. Witter Field saw the worst game of the year last night when the Mallards beat the Rafters 26-4. The closest the game got was Mallards 5 and Rafters 2 at the bottom of the second inning. The Rats couldn't catch up, and the Mallards saw their highest scoring game of the season. The two teams match up again tonight in Madison. First pitch at 6:35. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI, Civic Media News.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight. Otherwise, mainly cloudy skies expected. Lows level off around 60. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Slight chance for scattered storms tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 76. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Lows level off around 54. Tomorrow night, clear skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 81.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 19th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. We hope you're having a great day, and we are going to have some fun right now. Some of our favorite people to talk to. We have Mike Hittner here from Historic Point Boss. Mike, good to see you.
Yeah, good morning, James, and everybody in Radio Land.
Appreciate the time, as always, sir, and love talking with you. And we have on the phone with us Luke Conkle. Luke, good to have you with us.
Hey, James, good to be with you.
Really appreciate the time, sir. I know how busy you are, and I love talking to you, both of you, but this is one of my favorite things you guys do. We're going to talk about the whodunit, and not only is this right up my alley, but it's up everybody's alley. Right. This is one of the most popular events you guys host over there, and that's saying something.
Yeah, yeah, Seth. It's something, Luke, was it 11th or 12th year this year?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, yeah. I think
I don't know if we've hit lucky 13 yet.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's 11th or 12th year. I have to go back through all the other booklets, but we related to it last year, and then I said, well, I was going through all these booklets, and I think I saw, 2010 or 11 or something like that. So yeah, it's been a nice ride, and we've really enjoyed it, and especially all of Luke's effort to put this together, because that's where all the work is really. We just have the fun on the end, like anybody in a play or something like that.
Absolutely. I want to get into what the event is, and then specifically the Lumberman's Lament. Great name for a title. It's a great name.
Yeah,
let's get in. Oh, it's a good one, though. Look, I don't know how to talk well. I speak for a living, and I still don't know how to. What I want to get into is what the event is for and what it's about and how it came about, Mike, if you don't mind.
Yeah, we originally had the idea came up with the idea, and Rhonda worked with us on this for the first year, and she did a nice job. She had done this out east, some Civil War era things that she'd done out in Pennsylvania, and she just didn't want to keep it up. She did a year of it, and then Luke was around and has been around most of the time, in and out over the years, and I know Luke was doing some writing, and we kind of talked about it, and I think he volunteered. That's the problem, Luke, right? Volunteering.
Yeah.
It never ends. But Luke picked it up, and he's strung a beautiful thread through historically. It reads like it's not totally historically correct, but it's like a historic novel sort of thing, where we have some actual characters, and we weave them into a story, and Luke weaves them into the story, I should say, and he's come up with different ideas. We've been kind of throwing around the railroad idea, I think, Luke, what was it, for about 3-4 years now?
Yep.
We just didn't know how to work it in or something. We just didn't know how to work it in, but this year we got the railroad, Manitowoc and Mississippi coming in, bringing a crew and wanting to harvest lumber. So, of course, that's the kind of the background of it. And, of course, they even have a steward, which is almost unheard of. And as Luke would say, it wasn't heard of in this early of a day in this part of the United States, maybe on the East Coast. But it came about when George Pullman and the Pullman cars and the Pullman porters came about, and that was later than the story takes place in 1857. So Luke put it together with the steward, and the sheriff, of course, is out of town. He's in the town of Remington, so he has to be sent for, and Clive Dustin, the foreman for the lumbering crew, is found dead, shot to death. And the day before anybody really meets him, everybody else has communicated with him. Ada Turner, which is the wealthy lady played by Mystique McComber, and Robert Wakely and Claude Paquette kind of got together to go talk to the Native Americans and everything, make sure that they're harvesting where they should harvest and not harvesting on the Native Americans' land. And so this is kind of the lead up to the story. And so the community is really excited about it because it can bring more people in the community. Maybe the community will grow, and wherever the railroads grow, usually the people are, you know, more people come mm-hmm. with them. So it's kind of exciting. But of course, as we know, in summertime, we always have the problem that something happens at Point mm-hmm. Bus, at least for the last 12 or so years, yeah. something's happened there.
You got a real Agatha Christie Murdershe Wrote thing going on over there. I didn't want to bring it up, but I mean, it seemed like wherever she went, there was a murder. And yeah. Every time of year, right around this time.
Yeah, it seems like middle, end of July, there's something happens yeah. there. And then yeah. usually, once in a while, it's a theft. But normally, I'd say 8 out of 10 or 11 times, it's a murder. So
we're talking about the story now that is going to be featured in this original whodunit coming up July 29th at the Historic Point Bus right there in beautiful Nakusa. And when it came to the story, Luke, I want to talk with you a little bit about the creation of this. So I've been writing since I was 12, and one of the greatest things to happen to me as a writer is becoming a copywriter and having to write for other people. Mm-hmm. I learned what it really is to be a writer doing that, I feel like, because it wasn't about me and my ideas and opinions. It's about the client and all that. When it comes to something like this, I get a little bit of a similar feel from it. Did you find it that way as a writer, as a creative, that it's kind of helped you grow as a writer because you have a certain thing that you're trying to pull off here?
Yeah, I mean, definitely so. I think, especially given that we have some recurring characters and some crowd favorites and some, reenactor favorites. People like to come back and play the same sorts of characters. There's certainly you want to weave in a lot of that, some common threads, some Easter eggs for people that come back year to year. You don't need any of those to solve the mystery, but there's definitely a certain limit that you give yourself, to try to get to that end point, but still incorporate a lot of those features.
I know you do a lot of homework for these to make sure to be historically accurate and to get really into the terminology and little things that, like you said, Easter eggs that really make it more exciting and fun for everybody. Do you find yourself, when you're doing this, going down rabbit holes and learning even more than you planned on when it comes to it? Because I know that happens to me, and I know, Mike, it happens to you from time to time, too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, this year especially, trying to identify, which year made the most sense to have a railroad company doing this sort of foray into mm-hmm. the lumber industry, which is sort of an unusual thing, and to have this this steward along with them, settling on 1857, and then that sort of lent itself to this. There was actually a recession at that time. We're a couple months ahead of when that happened, but we'll take some liberties.
Artistic liberties, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and different things about the railroad came through and about stewards. We've had Morse code on the scene for about just over a decade now, and there's some coded messages and things. So that's sort of in the air. For the history buffs out there, that's in the air leading up to the Civil War, when code breaking became, it really burst onto the scene in terms of historical interest.
As parents and even as teachers and such, we try to find different ways to teach kids without them knowing. Mm-hmm. We find these little ways of, like, they're having fun and they don't realize they're learning a lesson while they're doing it or something like that. Are you doing that to us as adults, Luke? Are you, because in all seriousness, you do kind of sneak in facts and information in here while we're having fun with the whodunit and trying to figure out who the murderer is and all this. We're also learning as we go along, correct?
Yeah, I sure hope so.
Now, did you find yourself learning as you went along writing this?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, especially in terms of, Morse code, it features at one point at least in the background. That Morse code changed a little bit in the first decade. The lumber industry, trying to stay true to, whether or not a railroad would have run through, Wood County. And actually, speaking of Wood County, one of the sort of fun facts is, you know, this taking place in 1857. Wood County has only been a county split off from Portage County for just over a year. So that's, you know, that's something, you know, a little historical nugget that might come up for the guests as well.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. Luke included, at least in the characters information, they showed a map of the Manitowoc and Mississippi Railroad, and of course that map was probably circa 1857, but doesn't show the division yet of Portage County into Portage and Wood County.
I love looking at old maps. I'm such a nerd about this stuff. Whether it's world maps or old maps, I find it so cool to look at what used to be a country or how things were divided before, especially with America here, where you look at how the states were divided and all that. It's very interesting.
Now, there's books on how states were divided and where they got the lines and how they were drawn and why they were drawn and all that, you know, and all those oddities that kind of lost to history, but was the reason why they are what they are.
I don't do this very often. It's one of the only books I recommend, but How the States Got Their Shape. It's a short book. It is so good. It's so interesting. There's so many cool, interesting facts and things that come about there. And with that, one of the things that I learned from reading that book and others, and just growing up where I did in Chicago, our country, it was built on a lot of things, but one of the main things that we were built on is railroads, is being able to be a hub for that. It sounds like, and you guys touched on this a little bit before, this was a theme or a topic, if you will, that you wanted to incorporate into this, into the whodunit.
Correct. We didn't.
Yeah, we.
Go ahead, Luke. We
had talked about it a couple of times, just because rail, you know, was such a hot thing in the middle of the 19th century. So, and you know, given the time period that we're looking at here, Wisconsin has only been a state for something like 9 years, right? And so Wisconsin was still essentially the frontier. And so the expansion of rail was really, an important thing. And given the lumber industry at Point Bass, part of what we're trying to capture is, you know, this sort of soft competition between the river and the rail, and those modes of transportation. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting too, because we do have the river right there, and the rail sort of thing, and there was always this conjecture that when it came down by the river, it got aged or seasoned better, and on the rail it didn't, and there's all this fighting going on. I don't know if there's anything to it or if it was just a fight, you know.
Oh, that's good spin though. That's good. Interesting. How long did this take for you to write, Luke?
Oh boy, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Off and on for you know, the better part of a month. You know, it's the sort of thing that, you know, you start with an outline for the reveal, and then you go kind of back to the beginning, and you start with the characters and you try to weave them together and, you know, start pointing towards the reveal, but then, you know, invariably something changes and you have to go back and, you know, rewrite a character or write somebody out and replace them with somebody else. So, it's hard to quantify. You know, you're almost never not working on it when you're working on it, because, you know, something you'll see, you know, a bird fly a weird way, and it'll remind you of something that you want to include, you know.
Yeah. Write that down.
Luke, do you have any problem with knowing when to end it? I mean, I've known a lot of artists, both writers and painters, and they always say they have a hard time knowing when to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. I think the end point for me with these whodunits is if I think that one more sentence will give it away, that's when I stop.
That's good. Oh, that's good. Oh, I like that, Luke. That's a great question, Mike, too. One of my favorite questions to ask musicians is how to end a song. Mm-hmm. It's always been something that's very interesting to me. I do a little bit of music, but I don't even know where to begin with write a song, let alone how to end it. That's a good, interesting question right there. For the actors, Mike, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do we know how long the actors have to rehearse to get this down?
Well, there's no rehearsal other than their own.
Right.
Because we don't get together till an hour before it begins, and then that's just to kind of, you know, sift out a few questions or or maybe where the body was and why nobody maybe heard a gunshot or whatever. And it's just a few of those last minute questions. And so we really, you know, is kind of ad-libbing a script, a small script. And so, and a number of us have done it for a number of years. It's not so much of an issue for those that haven't or the first time ones. It might be a little harder because if they hadn't ad-libbed before, it, you know, it takes a certain talent and you got to know. And Luke always says, you can tell everything you know and give it out, but you can't lie.
You
can't mislead somebody. You can lead somebody, but you can't mislead them, sort of thing. So we always kind of, within our own group, kind of talk about who should we point, you know, fingers at, you know. And, you know, because reading the script, there's probably, I don't know, Luke, in my mind, probably four or five people that are prime suspects, but it could be either any one of them or it could be a combination of them. Who knows? But to my reading, it looks like four or five. So a number of us will point to this one. Somebody will point to that one. And not that we know, because the beauty of it is we don't even know who did it. So, you know, that's a real nice, because a lot of times the characters want to come up to us and say on the side, hey, who did it?
Yeah.
And we really can't tell them because we don't know. I mean, we have a suspicion. Mm-hmm. It may be true or not true. Yeah. And, of course, this year is a little different because we got a lot of ciphers and codes and things like that out there that we didn't have. And a lot of these will be visible to the public to take a look at and see if they can make anything out of them. But you don't need any of those to solve the mystery. Within the context of the bios we have, you can solve it. But those are added things. And I think Luke was looking at, some people were saying, well, can't we have a few more clues or something? And this was a way for him to give some more clues, I think.
Yeah, and all the clues this year, we're going to have nice signs saying, you know, this is a clue, you know.
I love that.
Here and you found it, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, people do, you know, they'll find some, I mean, it's a reenactment site, so, you know, you find historical artifacts, you know, around, and you'll say, well, is this a clue? And, you know, so specifically calling it out so that people can, you know, not go down too many rabbit holes other than, you know, the ones that they create in their own imagination.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, too, because Clive Dustin got killed by gunshot, but in a number of the characters have been associated with guns, but we don't know who it is, but you'd be surprised how many of the public want to come there and see their guns. You know, and know they're tucked away in a trunk or something like that, or whatever. We got to say something because they actually want to see the guns. You know, everybody's gun. What did it look like, you know, and this sort of thing? Because we got everything from pistols to rifles to a shotgun involved.
I appreciate the feedback on how long it took to write, how long the actors have and all these things, because as people that view this, I don't know that they always understand that stuff. And look, I teach improv. I know how difficult it can be. And one of the very first lesson in all improv is say yes. And whether it's the way Luke writes or the way you actors perform, that is always the case. You guys do such a good job with this year in and year out. And there aren't many things that I have a high echelon for, but acting is the one thing that I feel like I know what I'm talking about with. And you guys do an amazing job every single year with this. It really does deserve to be highlighted, along with attended, and we want people to attend. Mike, let's talk about the details of the event itself. The date and time we'll get to, and prices and stuff, but if I've never been to the whodunit before, what do I need to know walking into it?
Well, when you walk in and you pay your admission, we'll have a booklet for them there that'll give an outline sketch of this Lumberman's Lament, and then it'll also give a little sketch, a little bio for each of the characters, to place them, who they are and what, if you've never attended, it'll at least help with that. And then they'll have some information of how they should go about it. And we're open from 2 to 5. Now, a lot of people come at 2 because they want to really, you know, we see some of these people 4 or 5 times. It's like we become family after a while. You know, a lot of people come, we used to have longer hours, but we really don't need it. But a lot of people come 2:30 or 3, because I think you got to give it an hour to go around. The booklet also have a ballot on it, and they have a place for notes, so you can scratch notes, because they'll ask questions. And usually they come in groups, like either a family or some or some gals that enjoy this or whatever, and they'll come around as a group and they'll sketch notes, and then, well, this, you know, the sheriff said this, mm-hmm, but you mm-hmm. said this. Well, you know, go talk to him again, yeah, because I think he's lying. But whatever. But so you got places for notes. We have ballots, and Luke takes it very seriously because he takes all those ballots home with him at the end of the day just to find out who thought what and may get some clues of what he's given out or what he hasn't given out or what we as characters haven't given out, because he wants to study that and see how it all played out.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know you did that, Luke. That is awesome, man. That is smart, insightful, and very cool. Huh. Good. Has that helped you with future scripts when you're writing on these, the notes that you're reading there and stuff? Like, I want to avoid this.
It gives you a real good sense of, like, the thought process of the public, right? Because, you know, obviously when you write it, you have all the information in front of you. Mm-hmm. And something that you think is a really obvious clue or thread to go down, it gets totally missed. And then something that you think was a really offhand comment, you know, just for a little historical realism, gets, you know, they take it and they run with it, right? So you kind of learn year to year how to take those, you know, the paths that people go down and turn those into, you know, a little goat path for them to follow the next year.
Yeah, and what Luke will do sometimes is, you know, at 3:30 or so or 4:15, if seems like people are all going the wrong direction, you'll throw a few more hints out there or something.
Nice.
Just to get them a little more going the right direction or something, or at least off the dead end path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very Agatha Christie of you, Luke. Very, very, they're very cool. That's very cool. Luke, I actually we've only got a couple minutes left here. I wanted to let you go because I know you're in the middle of stuff and everything, but I look forward every year to talking to you, man. You do great work. Thank you so much for what you do.
Yeah, thanks, James, for having me.
And you take care. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, Luke.
You too.
Again, thank you to Luke Conkle for joining us there. Writer of The Lumberman's Lament, another whodunit with the Historic Point Boss. Mike, with our last couple of minutes here, I wanted to touch on the event details. What time is it? You know, how much it might cost and those sorts of things.
It's Saturday, July 29th, and it's from 2 to 5 in the afternoon on Saturday. And we'll have, you know, some water that people can purchase and something if it's a hot day. I don't know the forecast of the future looks like a little warmer next week. So we'll have some of that. There's plenty of trees and shelters and benches for people to sit in and come as early as you'd like, but spend a little time. You know, what we really do is cut off sales around 4:15, 4:20, because if you don't have at least an hour to give to it, I mean, we like to take your money, but you're not going to learn anything from
it. Right, right.
But so we kind of break down the admissions desk about 4:15, 4:20, because we want to give people time. And those people that are working at the desk want to come over and see the reveal or maybe even check into a few characters that they have a little question about, sort of thing. So
we've all got a little Columbo in us.
Yes.
We all want to solve these things. Yeah. I think that's a really good note to get there a little early if you can. And and give yourself an hour. I think that's for one, you're going to want an hour there. I don't know how you spend 5 seconds at the store point, boss. You want an hour there at least.
Well, and also going from one spot to another, though, where it's all on the west side of the creek, there's a trader's cabin and the three-bay shed and the barn and the house, and there's a few flies for some of the people, like the school teacher, which we brought over to the west side because we didn't want people running all the way back to the other side. So in order to go around physically, it takes you some time too. Some of those places take 5 minutes to walk from one spot to the other. So I think allow yourself more time, because you can always, we built a new shelter there. You can take a look at that and spend some time on the shelter, nice and shady. And and if there's any kind of breeze, you'll pick it up there. So nice. We welcome you to come down and spend some time, spend the afternoon with us.
Yeah. And I do want to send a big thank you to all the actors, all the volunteers, to Luke, to everybody that makes this happen. It's such a fun, wonderful event that our community looks forward to. And so many people give of their time to do this.
Yeah, we have at least two community theater people. We have one from Stevens Point that has been in Stevens Point Theater. We got an individual that's been on the outside, actually a classmate of Luke's, and she'll be interpreting as a character. And then, of course, about five of us from the Wakely family. So that's kind of interesting.
It really is. And it's going to be such a fun event. Again, the Lumberman's Lament, the original whodunit going on at the Historic Point Boss, takes place next Saturday, July 29th, at 300 Wakely Road in beautiful Nacoosa from 2 to 5. Encourage you to check this out. And certainly, if we're looking, we're always looking for volunteers and for people to put back into the soil over there at Historic Point Boss if they can. Mike, if they have follow-up questions or want to know more how to volunteer, how can they do that?
Yeah, they can check our website and go on there and leave a message or whatever, or they can call me at 715-421-2061. And putting on the soil, we want to put that literally, because it sounds like we're burying somebody here.
You know, I got in the theme of the story. That's what happened there.
See what happens?
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, James, and WFHR.
We'll be back with more Midday Magazine tomorrow right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Millions of people are feeling the heat again today, and it's not just getting worse. It's spreading. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti's in Phoenix.
We're in this for quite a while yet, and again, it's that prolonged heat that becomes more serious.
Forecasters say summers like this one could be here to stay, prompting this urgent warning from U.S. climate envoy John Kerry.
The climate crisis is a universal threat.